everybody. Thanks for coming out. We are so happy to see you. Welcome. I'll read you something. We'll start there. Once there was a thief who had mastered the art of thievery. His exploits were legendary, and his son looked up to him and wished to walk in his footsteps. So the son trained hard to practice all the skills of theft that his father had, but he knew that the training couldn't compare to the real thing. So with the impatience of youth, he frequently asked his father to take him along on a heist, but his father always said the same thing, "You're not ready." He said, "When, father, when am I going to be ready?" He said, "You'll see." So one night, the thief told his son to follow him. And finally, the son thought, a chance for some real action. So together they moved into a large mansion, quietly. And once inside, the thief pointed to a door and motioned for the son to enter. And the son went in and saw that it was only a closet. So he turned around quickly just as the father closed the door on him and locked it. He whispered urgently, "Father, what are you doing? Let me out." And instead of unlocking the door, his father went running down the hallway of the mansion screaming, "Thief! Thief!" And he ran outside the mansion and then disappeared into the night. Bummer. Right? Right? Finally, our chance comes. We get what we think we want, and it doesn't look anything like what we think it's going to look like. So years ago, I worked with a gentleman who was a furniture salesman and probably the unhappiest furniture salesman you probably ever met. Maybe he waited on you. You go in all happy to get your furniture, and who isn't happy to redesign their house? And here is this man who clearly doesn't want to be in that place, doesn't want to be waiting on you, doesn't want to be doing this. And he had been doing it for 20 years. And when I met him, his sole wish was to find out why he was so unhappy. So we went, as we always do. If you have a question, the one place you want to go is just a little bit deeper inside of yourself to where the answers actually are. Because where else, who else is going to give you the answers that you need, that you want, that you're looking for, except that part of yourself that knows, and it knows that it knows. Gene Houston is a great philosopher, a great teacher. She's in the forefront of the human development movement. She has been around for a long time, that woman. Her dad was a comedy writer. He used to write for, do you remember, Edgar Bergen, with his ventriloquist, the dummy, Charlie McCarthy, right? So she went with her dad Jack, went to bring a script to Edgar Bergen, thank you. And they're in the hotel, in the hallway, the door is open, and they hear Edgar talking, and they kind of look in the door before they go in. The hallway door is open to their hotel room, and they look in, and there is Edgar talking to Charlie McCarthy, the ventriloquist dummy that he, of course, works. So he's talking to the dummy. He doesn't know that they're out in the hall listening. So her dad says, "Just be quiet. Let's just be quiet. Let him. He's probably rehearsing," he says. So they start listening. And Edgar, true story, and Edgar is saying to his ventriloquist dummy, he has his hand inside of the dummy. He is talking to it. And he is saying these things. "Charlie, what is the meaning of life? What do you think it means to focus on the true and the beautiful? What would a life like that look like?" These are the questions he's asking. And Charlie, she's 8 years old at the time, Jean Houston. Charlie, she said, was answering him with like these high and beautiful concept. She said, you would have thought that he was sitting with a sage, the answers that were coming out of the ventriloquist dummy, Charlie McCarthy. She couldn't believe it. Well, after a while, her dad just coughed just to let him know that they're there because he wasn't stopping. There was no place that they could pause and step in. And Edgar looks up, sees them at the doorway. He gets all flushed and embarrassed. He apologizes. He says, I'm so sorry. I'm just in the middle of that. And Jack said, what was that? What were you doing? He said, well, I was asking Charlie some important questions. And Charlie was answering me. And he said, yeah, but Edgar, Charlie's a dummy. He's a wooden dummy. You operate Charlie with your hand. It's your voice coming out of his mouth. It's your mind coming out of his mind. He said, yeah, but somehow when Charlie's talking to me, I learn so much more than I think I even know. Right? So, true story. What is he doing? He's accessing the place in his own deeper conscious mind that some might call the subconscious mind, the deeper conscious mind, one mind, divine mind, your divine intuition. It doesn't make a difference what you call it, but you gotta know that deep down within everybody, at the level that we call the soul's level, the place in us that knows and knows that it knows, the place that remembers every moment in time, what happened and what it means, the story of the facts of your life and the true story of the essential, deeper story of your life, this lives with inside of every body. So when the furniture salesman came to meet with me, and he's now pushing 60 years old, he's been doing this his whole life miserably with a family and kids, and you have bills to pay, and once you get into a job, you know, maybe you can't get out of it as easily because you need to have it, and your wife wants you to work, and you feel stuck. You just feel stuck in this story that's just so small. It's so narrow. And so he goes down to this deeper place within him, as we all can, as we all do, if we know it's there. And he asked this question, and his soul responded to him. You were never meant to be a furniture salesman. That was meant to be a tiny little job to pay your bills when you first got married. You weren't meant to live in this job and make your whole life about selling people furniture. That's not your destiny. Your destiny is you love to teach people. That's your greatest happiness. You're a natural born teacher. You love people and you love to learn and you love to help people learn. And when he got that message, see, we ask and we will always get an answer. We think we don't. We always get an answer. This young little boy said, take me with you. I'm ready. And his dad takes him with him. But this is not at all what he expected to happen, to be locked in a closet for his dad to lock the door, run down the hall screaming thief, and leave the mansion and have the kid figure it out for himself. So his soul said, you've always wanted to be a teacher, and you're never going to be happy until you are, because that's what you were born to do. We don't have to go searching high and low for what it is we love to do. What we love to do, we would do for free. That's how much we love doing it. We would give it away. We love it so much. Our destiny is not something different than who we are. It's who we are. It's so who we are and what we love to do already. And that's inside of us. He said, teach. His soul said, teach. And so this gentleman did exactly what the young thief did, which is, I'm ready. And we all say this, I'm ready. We have our dream and we say, I'm ready. Why isn't it here? If I know it and I want it, give it to me. So life gave it to him. And that week, literally within 7 days, his boss came to him, sat him down in his office and said, you know what? I think I gotta let you go. Right? That's not at all what we have in mind. We do not want to be locked into a closet or backed into a corner or be fired when we say we want our destiny and we're ready. See, we don't ask what our destiny is. We don't want to go down to that deeper place and access where the answers really are, because we might be put in a pickle like that and in a position that is totally inconvenient for us, totally uncomfortable. What did we call it weeks ago? The authors will call it, a writer will call it, an inciting incident. Not exciting. It's exciting, but not in a good way. Inciting. It incites the energy of the story to move forward. It incites the main character to be pressed into a larger story of his life. It incites progress. What happens in an inciting incident is your story is moved forward, and a writer would say, here is where the plot thickens, right? That's what it's called. And we love thickening plots, except when the plot thickens in our life and our boss calls us in and says, you know what? The job's over. I'm so sorry. There are younger men who are working for me who are so much happier, who are so much more in touch with the young people who are coming in, who love their job so much more than you. You haven't been happy for a long time. You've been here forever. I'm going to have to let you go. I'm so sorry. Right? An inciting incident means the plot has thickened. Now, when the plot thickens in our life, and everybody has plot thickeners, is that true? How many people have had their plot thickened? Yeah, okay, so only half your hands. I so do not believe that the other half are either texting right now and not even listening to the question. Plot thickening, plot thickening. Name one plot thickener. I'm not going to make you talk about it. Just name it. What is it? What has happened? One thing.
Divorce.
A divorce. Plot thickener. That's a good one. That's a good one. Illness. That's a good one. You have to give up your apartment, meaning you're being pushed out of your apartment. Yes, being pushed out of your apartment.
Natural disaster.
What is that?
Natural disaster.
A natural disaster.
Relationships with siblings.
Yes, relationships with siblings. That falls under the big F word, the family word, not to be mistaken with the four-letter word. Go ahead, who else? Plot thickeners.
Unemployment after moving to a new apartment.
Oh. Unemployment after moving to a new apartment. Don't you hate that plot thickener? Yes! Here he is. He's in a closet. We're backed into a corner. Now, if anybody knows any philosophers, you might hear us talk here, what ministers have said, what the Tao Te Ching has said, what the Bible has said. It's helpful to know that what you're hearing not only comes from those people who walk a deeper path, but let's find out what somebody says who is like an emperor, okay? A Roman emperor, a regular guy, okay? He's walking around in a toga. He is not a special minister, reverend, or a priest. He's an emperor in Rome. That's a very serious place. Here is what Marcus Aurelius says in his book on meditations, and not meditating, meditations on life. He says this: it's possible to live out your whole life in perfect contentment, even though the whole world deafens you with its roar, and wild beasts tear apart your body like a lump of clay. He's Roman, I warned you, right? Because that's what they did for entertainment when they didn't have reality shows like we had. They threw people into the ring with the wild lions, so keep that in mind. For nothing can shake a steady mind out of its peaceful repose. Nothing can bar it from correct judgment or defeat its readiness to see the benefit that all things bring. Everything is turned to one advantage when he greets a situation like this. Quote, you are the very thing I was looking for. Not one pencil went down. I saw that. Not one person wrote that. Who wants to write that down? You are the very thing I was looking for. Unemployment after I get my apartment. Divorce. I don't think so. Being pushed out, being fired. You are. And you look at these words, it's like, really? You are the very thing I was looking for. This guy, after giving his whole life to this furniture business, gets fired. The young boy waiting for his moment gets locked in a closet and betrayed by his father, and the plot thickens. And here's what they call this on the path that we might call the spiritual path. And keep in mind, when we say spiritual, the Greek root of the word spiritual is this: to breathe. That's it. That's all the dogma that you have. That's all the dogma you're going to get. The teachings are all going to be given to you with one essential agenda: breathe deeply. If you understand these teachings, if you follow them, if you apply them in your life, you're going to be able to walk through your life and breathe more deeply. That's all that they promise. And what a promise it is. How do you breathe deeply when wild animals, he says, when wild animals, Aurelius says, wild beasts tear apart your body like a lump of clay, which is what it feels like when the plot thickens and an incident body slams us. It's great for the writer to say, oh, I've just put so many obstacles in the path of the hero in my book, and it's just so much fun to watch him overcome it. Well, when we're that person, it's really not fun at all. And yet, there's no other way for life itself to move us in the direction of our destiny, of who we're truly meant to be, unless something happens that on this spiritual path they call this word. And you're going to love this word because it really describes exactly what it is and feels like. It is called a divine wound. We are wounded in some way. And it's a wound. And we are left raw and vulnerable and open, feeling betrayed, feeling angry. I mean, this is an adorable story about a thief and his son, and you know that it's come from someplace in the East, and it's charming as hell. Unless you're the kid. If you're the kid at 8 years old, I assure you at 28, you're already in therapy. Because you had a dad who, when you put all your trust in him, he betrayed you. Bastard! How can you do this to your only son? He had one son. In the East, having a son is the most important thing. This is what he did to his one son. This guy gives his whole life to this furniture guy who he works for in this small business. He gave his whole life that he's hated to this guy, and he gets fired. That's the end. That's the result. That is a wound. And it's a radical surprise when it happens. It's always a radical surprise, and it's always inconvenient. It's always not what we expect, and it's not what we want. And what we feel like saying is, I want to stop the story right here. That's what we do. I want to stop the story right here. I don't want to read another word. But we know in stories, especially in our own, we can't stop the story. We have ways of stopping the story. One way of stopping the story is we blame. The minute you go into whose fault it is that this happened, the moment you go there, you've put the pause button on your story. Literally, you have left the greater story of your life, and you are stuck in the story of, I am fired, I am fired, I am fired, I am fired, like a record. And it starts to bring up all the feelings of you being fired, and you start attracting to you all the other people who've been fired. And now you have a group of people chanting, I am fired, I was fired, I was fired, right? You get together for drinks or you smoke a little J, I was fired, I was fired. And now you have a story, except it's the story that they call the neurotic story. The neurotic story is the smallest possible story repeated over and over again. And you wake up the next morning and nothing has changed. That's the problem with the smaller story. And they call the smaller story, it has a name. It's called a tale. They don't call it a story, they call it a tale. And they call it the trivial tale.
That's where we get locked in. We get locked into the trivial tale, the tale of the trivia of our life. And we go there, we land there, when we don't let this wound do its job, because we think we don't understand what the wound is, and we think the wound is a mistake. We think a mistake has happened in our story. And here's the truth about the wound. When we understand, I'll go back to Marcus Aurelius for 1 minute. He says, everything, everything, that's a sweeping word, everything, contains some special purpose and hidden blessing. What then could be strange or arduous when all of life is here to greet you like an old and faithful friend? True understanding is to see the events of life in this way. You are here only for my benefit, though rumor paints it otherwise. You are here only for my benefit, though rumor paints it otherwise. When we understand, when that wound comes, what has happened, what it means, exactly what that wound is the eternal has just entered the world of time and is calling you by name. Why? Because the story in which you are living is too small for you now. It wasn't before. It might not have been up to a day ago. But right now, the story you are living in is too small. And the eternal itself, life itself, the larger story of your life is inserting itself into this world of time. Eternity is knocking on the door of time in your life and saying, time's up. Because you've been living in too small a story for too long a time. See, those first inciting incidents, they're all so gentle. Oh my God, there's just some small thing happens. We're reading in a book, which is our favorite way to grow and learn. We're reading in a book and we say, oh my gosh, you know, I've really not been happy in my job for so long. I wonder if I should really consider taking a risk and moving on to something I love doing. Oh, well, I'll just have another drink and turn the page. Okay, so that we get about 20 or 30 of those little messages, little knocks on the door, like little gravel being thrown, the Romeo and Juliet style, up to our window, and we hear them, but we don't really have to listen because they're so gentle and our life is kind of so set already. He might hate being a furniture salesman, but you know what? It's better than not having a job at all. And like, he's too old to consider how he will move into being a teacher. And he doesn't have the right, maybe, degrees for it. So we hear the message, and the wound that comes isn't a wound at first. It's a message. The problem with the messages is they are so gentle and so darling and so kind, and we journal about them. Yes, I have a feeling I need to make a change in my life. Turn the page. Anyway, as I was saying, I'd really like to go shopping this afternoon. The thing is, these messages do not in any way impact us. They don't incite us to do anything until, man, and we hate that it has to be this way, and everybody says the same thing. Why does it have to be so hard? Why does it have to hurt? Why does it have to be so painful? And I'll tell you why. And I think we already know why. Because the first 24 times we hear the message, we don't want to listen to it. And it is not inciting enough to even incite us to go do anything about anything. So we wake up tomorrow in the same situation we were before, only when the pain comes, which is why they call it a wound that must be ministered to, because that's a wound. A wound doesn't heal till you minister to it. only until it's a wound, until we are just knocked on our ass or kicked out of a relationship or kicked out of a job or something big or something radical or even something wonderful and scary happens. Because we can get the answer to our prayer. I had a class where one woman absolutely put all her energy towards praying to get her own television show. That was her thing. She had no credentials for it whatsoever, but she had the desire to be on that show more than anybody. You could see just the froth in her mouth, how badly she wanted that thing. And here's the thing about a desire. When you light a fire under a desire, and you wrap around all your thinking, all your attitudes, all your beliefs, all your everyday energy, she ended up with a cable show about finances. She surely did. But I mention it because she couldn't hold on to the show. Why? It was an inciting incident that pushed so many buttons, that made her so nervous, that made her so scared. Her prayer was answered, but am I worthy? Do I deserve it? Will people think I'm a fraud? And she went right to the place of being unable to hold it. We think an inciting incident is just a wound that happens, that something radically surprising and bad happens. The truth is, an inciting incident is anything that radically surprises you and puts you face to face with the fact that you're living in a story a little bit too narrow for your soul, for your soul. So here we are. He's in the closet, right? Many of us have been. The son was trapped. Okay, the son was trapped. Awakened by the disturbance, the residents of the mansion got up to investigate. The servants banded together to conduct a room-by-room search. The son had to free himself. But how? And an idea occurred to him. When the servants came closer to the closet, he made little mouse noises and mouse scratchings. And reacting to this, the servants unlocked the closet door to take a look. At that moment, the son sprang into action. He kicked the door wide open and pushed the servants aside as he went running down the corridors, out the mansion, running for his life. And once out of the mansion, the son was able finally to get away, and he made his way back home where he found his father waiting for him. Right, so this guy's fired, and he's sitting face to face, mano a mano with his boss. And you know all those feelings that go through us. If we do not know, listen to what the Tao Te Ching says. It says, the difference between knowing the truth and not knowing the truth, capital T. We're not talking about the facts of your life. The facts are clear. What his dad did to him is clear. What his boss did to him, that's clear. We're not talking about the facts of our life. That is the smaller story. We're talking about the truth. The truth is the whole story. It's the story seen through the eyes of your soul 360 degrees. The story of your soul that knows who you are and why you're here. It knows why you incarnated. It knows what your purpose is. It knows what your relationship to life itself is. It knows the why of every single inciting incident of your life, and it will tell you if you ask it. That's the truth. That's why we go a little bit deeper and ask the deeper question. That's what the soul provides to you. It provides you with the truth. It's a story, but it's a deeper story. And the difference between the smaller story and the deeper, the difference between look what happened to me and why what happened to me is night and day. The Tao says the difference between knowing the truth and not knowing it, how great. Tomorrow morning you wake up and know your smaller story and tell it and retell it, you wake up the same person. Tomorrow morning after the night before, telling the truth about what has happened to you and why it has happened to you, what it's here for, you wake up tomorrow morning, sorry, you're not the same person. Because in that wound, in the retelling of the story at the level of the truth, the essential story, the story of why what happened to you happened for you, in telling the story that way, in that wound, literally,
What rushes through that opening is an amazing flow of universal energy, cosmic energy, life force energy, psychic energy that moves through you and heals you. It's the energy that's required to heal the wound. You get the wound, look at this, you get the wound, and you get the energy to heal the wound once you understand what the wound is and you call it by name. Marcus Aurelius calls it a friend, right? Back to the Tao, the difference between knowing the truth and not knowing it. How great. Must I fear what others fear? Should I fear desolation when there is abundance? Should I fear darkness when the light is shining everywhere? Nonsense, the Tao says. Nonsense. When we can see rightly, the Course in Miracles has the audacity to say the line. We called this line. What did we say tonight was called? What did we say? Who knows? Because I can't find my page. There is no fear. Is that what we called it? Who read what I sent out? We spend good time writing those things. God darn it, I can't remember everything. What's the line? You're not going anywhere till I find... Oh, there is nothing to fear. You didn't even know it yourself. God darn it. What is her problem? So there's nothing to fear. It has the audacity to say there is nothing to fear. Now, either all these teachings are like ridiculous and out of touch with life, or they know something that when we know it, it's going to change us. And we will be able to see it the way it actually is. We will be able to see that everything that happens to us comes with a blessing, comes with the greater story, wanting to come through that crack, that wound. Leonard Bernstein, the poet, wrote, "Let the bells ring. Ring those bells that still can ring. Put down your perfect offering." Stop asking for life to be something different than what it is. Put down your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. He says, that's how the light gets in. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. And the amount of the pain that we receive from the wound is going to be measured by the amount of time we have refused to hear that message. And you know that message comes at least 24 to 48 times gently before it starts body slamming us and giving us a real pain and a real wound. Jean Houston said all of the people that she's worked with who've worked with people with cancer, and this isn't to pull into all illness just saying it's about cancer, it's about illness, any illness, everybody's illness. And if we're in human bodies, everybody gets a dose of illness because it is a great tool for this. She says, here's what they discovered. All these teachers, all these scientists, all these people who have come together in the healing arts to figure out what illness is, they discover that the people who are ill are living in too narrow of a story. And when they expand the story in which they're living in, the healing forces that are in their body blocked from coming through because we've stopped our story midway and said, you know what? I don't like how this story's going. I'm too afraid. I'm not going to let it through. We also block the life force that comes in to heal the very wound we have. That is the great eternal story of our life, trying to push itself through into our life and awaken us into the greater story of our life. He comes home. His father is waiting for him. This man is sitting in front of his boss. There are two ways we can go forward when the plot thickens in our life and we learn what the truth is, because the difference is so great. If we go one way and we know what the wound is, that wound is going to take us to a healing, into a life that we barely imagined could be ours. If we're going to fight with the wound, if we're going to resist the plot thickening, if we're going to be angry at it and blame, we literally stop the story right there, and all that healing energy, all that life force that moves through us
Because where is our new life going to come from? Where is our more money going to come from? Where's our new love going to come from? It's going to come through us. We're going to be the vehicle through which it moves. We're going to be the vehicle. So if we're asking for something more, wanting something more, it's got to come through you. And in order for it to come through you, we got to do something. We've got to let go and release the old story of our life that is a bit too small for us, a bit too snug, and maybe has been for a long time. We got to release that story and let the new story come through. The furniture salesman says to his boss, he said, I got up and I stood on my side of the desk and I pointed my finger, and he was a formidable man, and he pointed his finger at him and he said, you fire me, I sue you. If we don't understand what the wound is, we don't understand that the person across the desk is our friend. We don't understand that you're just the thing I was looking for, Marcus Aurelius says. You're just the thing I was looking for. What was he looking for? He was looking for a new life. How do you get a new life? You have to let go of the old one. And this boss was giving him his out. But if you don't know that, then your boss is a bastard, and these times are hard, and this is unfair, and this is bad karma. The boy goes home to his father. His father's sitting and waiting for him, right? After what his father did, you know, you're so angry. How could you have, you know, I trusted you. He comes home, his father's waiting for him. Welcome back. His father says, welcome back. Tell me, he said to his son, how did you escape? And the son gave a detailed report. And when he was done, he saw his father nodding. He says, now, you're ready to be a thief, said his father with a smile. Right? Listen to Marcus Aurelius. I'm going to go back there. How great the Tao says to know the difference between what is true and what is not true. Because when you know what is true, when you know what's truly happening to you, when you know, as the Course in Miracles says, that there is nothing, nothing to fear. Hear these words. Everything contains some special purpose and hidden blessing. This is not spoken by a rabbi. This is spoken by a serious Roman emperor with his thongs on the ground. We have to understand we're listening to people who 1,000 years later, what they learned comes back and syncs up with all the teachings that say, do you really need to walk around this world frightened of your own shadow just because everybody else is? Why would you walk around your life frightened of your own shadow, afraid of every possible bad thing that could happen when there is light abounding everywhere? That's the Tao. Everything contains some special purpose and hidden blessing. What then could be strange or arduous when all of life is here to greet you like an old and faithful friend? Truly, he says, whatever arises in life is the right material to bring about your growth and the growth of those around you. We have spent the majority of our time together so far talking about the two sides of our nature and how important it is to choose to depend on the part of our nature that strengthens us, that sees rightly, that knows the truth, that knows what is coming at it. Because when we ally ourselves with that which makes us strong, we're not crouching in the corner of a vestibule, afraid of the next bad thing that somebody might do to us. We're not crouching at all. In fact, we call forth the part of ourself that's within us. This whole path of breathing more deeply, which is all this path is, to be in your life and so relaxed that you can breathe deeply no matter what is transpiring, because you know what's really transpiring. All of life is pressing in and moving you into the greater story of your life. So you're not leading an individual life anymore. You're leading a greater life. It's not just me and me and me anymore. It's we. You start to get connected to the people around you. Your life has meaning to the world around you. Life is always talking to you, and now you can understand its language and begin to speak back into that conversation about who you are and why you're here. Otherwise, all of life becomes about avoiding the bad stuff from day to day that seems to hurt us and prick our fingers like thorns and make us sad and mad and make us angry and make us scared. Versus, you begin to make the decision that the new story is going to be written from the part of your nature that can say these words, "Thy will be done." That's where we began week one. Thy will be done. And by thy, we mean that greatness within us that could speak through the ventriloquist dummy that came from the man asking the questions himself. We have the answers. And what we're saying is, if we can go down deeply enough beneath the fear that everybody has, and recognize that beneath the fear are our answers. Beneath the fear is the soul. Beneath the wave we think we are is this ocean that we truly are. What this path says is, be the ocean that you are. Don't pretend you're the ocean. Be the ocean that you are. Look at the situation in front of you as the ocean that you are. Because what part of you could ever say these words without a martini in your hand? You are the very thing I was looking for. We got to be able to say it, but we got to be able to say it when we're not high. We got to be able to say it and really mean it. And the only part of us that could say, "You are the very thing I am looking for. Being fired is the very thing I was looking for, because I needed to be free. And in order to go into my next story, I needed a pass to get out of jail. And I didn't have the balls to do it myself. Thank you for giving me what I needed so I can now be set free." Because if he fires him, now he's on unemployment. So he's got a little bit of money as a bridge to get him to his new life. He goes to court. Man, the next 3 years of his life are a living hell. He might get the job he hates back. But what has he gained? The only part of us that can say, "You are what I was looking for." The only part of us that can say, "You are only here for my benefit, though rumor paints it otherwise," is our soul, is our essential nature, is the truth about who we are. When we can begin to say these words, even if we don't feel them, we can begin to say them even if we don't trust them yet. When we can begin to say them, we are literally opening the door of that deep within us, that great within. We are beginning to resurrect a part of our nature that has the strength, that has the courage, that has the sight to know that this wound has come not to break me, to break me open. Not to kill me and lay me out, but help me rise up out of a story I've been living that's just too goddamn small for me. And I've known it for years. And we've known it for years. And we've known it for years. And while we might be okay living the rest of our life in a tiny, little, narrow story, you will notice that these inciting incidents, the plot thickening, gets thicker and thicker, like a stew, like a crockpot stew. And everywhere you turn is just another thing that's just reminding you, why are you still here? You should have left this job ages ago. You're miserable. You're miserable in this relationship. Why are you still here? Why are you still addicted to this drug? Why are you still doing this? Why are you still here? The greater story, that is the eternal story of our life, is an invitation. It is knocking on our door, and it'll keep knocking. And like a hound of frickin' heaven, it is going to hound us, literally, until we open the door and accept the invitation to let the greater story of our life, the eternal story, the reason why we chose to even be here in this world, have our attention, our full attention. Why? Because that's where our happiness is. That's where our fulfillment is. That's where the answers to our prayers are. That's where the answers to our dreams is. That's exactly why we're here. That's what we're looking for. That's what we want. And it's the answer to what we want. But if we can't see it rightly, we battle it. We blame it. We hate it. We stop it. And what are we doing? We're stopping the very thing that has come like an old friend to help us move from our unhappy state of being into what is promised us on this path, our perfect happiness. Enough said. Thank you for coming. Thank you so much for coming out tonight.